Flom had the same experience. For 20 years, he perfected his craft at Skadden Arps. Then the world changed, and he was ready. He didn't triumph over adversity. Instead, what started out as adversity ended up being an opportunity. It's not that those guys were smarter lawyers than anyone else, Rifkin says. It's that they had a skill that they'd been working on for years that was suddenly very valuable. Lesson number 2, demographic luck. Maurice Janklow enrolled in Brooklyn Law School in 1919. He was the eldest son of Jewish immigrants from Romania. He had 7 brothers and sisters. One ended up running a small department store in Brooklyn. 2 others were in the haberdashery business. One had a graphic design studio. Another made feather hats. And another worked in the finance department at Tishman Realty. Maurice, however, was the family intellectual, the only one to go to college. He got his law degree and set up a practice on Court Street in downtown Brooklyn. He was an elegant man who dressed in a Homburg and Brooks Brothers suits. In the summer, he wore a straw boater. He married the very beautiful Lillian Levantin, who was the daughter of a prominent Talmudist. He drove a big car. He moved to Queens. He and a partner then took over a writing paper business that gave every indication of making a fortune. Here was a man who looked, for all the world, like the kind of person who should thrive as a lawyer in New York City. He was intelligent and educated. He came from a family well-schooled in the rules of the system. He was living in the most economically vibrant city in the world. But here is the strange thing. It never happened. Maurice Janklow's career did not take off the way that he'd hoped. In his mind, he never really made it beyond Court Street in Brooklyn. He struggled and floundered. Maurice Janklow had a son named Mort, however, who became a lawyer as well, and his son's story is very different from that of the father. Mort Janklow built a law firm from scratch in the 1960s. Then he put together one of the very earliest cable television franchises and sold it for a fortune to Cox Broadcasting. He started a literary agency in the 1970s, and it is today one of the most prestigious in the world. He has his own plane. Every dream that eluded the father was fulfilled by the son. Why did Mort Janklow succeed where Maurice Janklow did not? There are, of course, 100 potential answers to that question. But let's take a page from the analysis of the robber barons of the 1830s and the software programmers of 1955 and look at the differences between the two Janklows in terms of their generation. Is there a perfect time for a New York Jewish lawyer to be born? It turns out that there is. And this same fact that helps explain Mort Janklow's success is the second key to Joe Flom's success as well. Lewis Terman's genius study, as you will recall from the Chris Langan chapter, was an analysis of how children with really high IQs, who were born between 1903 and 1917, turned out as adults. And the study found that there was a group of real successes and a group of real failures, and the successes were far more likely to come from wealthier families. In that sense, the Terman study underscores the argument Annette Leroux makes that what your parents do for a living and the assumptions that accompany the class your parents belong to matters. There's another way to break down the Terman results, though, and that's by when the termites were born.